Minnesota Reads on Northland Morning is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. This morning, we are thrilled to welcome Tara Perrin. She is the author of a book called Tecosa. She's also the author of a new book called Animals of Turtle Island, and it's available in two different editions. Tara, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us this morning. It's great to have you on the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So, Animals of Turtle Island, it's one book, but it's kind of two books. Explain how that works.
So both books are in English with the animals in Dakota in one book and then the animals in Ojibwe in the other book.
So was this your idea to do, I mean, I can certainly understand saying, oh, we should have an indigenous language and then we should have the English translation. But was it your idea to say we should have Dakota and Ojibwe?
Yes, it was. I am both Dakota and Ojibwe. I studied Dakota language and culture, so that was really important to me to keep that going. But in talking with my elders, and I attend an Ojibwe ceremony once a week, it just meant the world to me to have both languages and mix in English so there could be many readers that would understand and fall in love and learn the animal names. I think that was important to me.
You know, we've had some really fascinating conversations. As a matter of fact, we had one just on Tuesday. Brian Yazzie was our guest, and he talked about the difference between cultural appropriation and cultural appreciation and paying respect and knowing whose land you're standing on, as a matter of fact. So from this standpoint, it would be easier actually for non-Indigenous people to say, well, you know, here in our part of the state, these are the people who were here first. And they could kind of pick the book that was appropriate, perhaps, for where they are. We talk a little bit about, I'm curious, obviously, Indigenous people have been educated to the European standard for hundreds of years, and that's been part of the problem in many respects. But talk about the benefit for non-Indigenous people to learn a little bit about Dakota language and culture, Ojibwe language and culture.
I think it's really important for them to understand that these here in Minnesota, Minnesota is a Dakota word. It's Minishota. And I think it's important to understand, I know, for my family and my elders, the animals here and this land itself had heard these languages first. So to be able to connect with them in a sacred way, that means that that connection can be brought to all of us. And I know, especially in this time right now, it is important to recognize that these first people of this land and this nation, you know, they pay them respects to the things that are sacred to them, the things that came before us. These Makaunchi, Mother Earth, she's been here. She's our elder. These animals, all these things were made first, and that's what we believe in our culture. So humans were last. So this world lives on, and it's lived before us. It will go on to live after us. It's extremely important to know that all of this will survive without us. We need these animals and this land and to make that connection with Indigenous people and to say we respect and honor what you're doing and we see you, we recognize you, that means a lot.
You are also obviously an English speaker. We're brought up as an English speaker. Mm-hmm. I guess I don't feel as though, having been brought up as an English speaker, that there's been any particular attention paid either in terms of language or in terms of cultural teachings to any kind of sacred connection between me and the land. And I think the European attitude about land, again, has been one of those very difficult, very, you know, has created some extraordinarily difficult, painful chapters in human history. Mm-hmm. I think it's easier for people, perhaps because we have more access to animals, to connect with them on a personal level. And yet our language still doesn't have, you know, when you say, oh, my dog is the best person I've ever met, people look at you like, well, he's not a person. You know, our language, at least the English language, hasn't caught up with some of these concepts. Talk about what's missing in the English language in terms of words and in terms of the ideas behind them.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I think is fascinating about the languages, Dakota and Ojibwe and many other languages, is there's not a lot, what I've noticed, is there's not a lot of words that we can translate to the English language. And I think for me that's a form of beauty, because some of our words come from an emotion that can't be put into an English word, maybe not even a Dakota word. It's just this, you know, we try to form it into something. But some of our language is so beautiful that it's not, it can't be put into a word. And so I know that when I, you know, growing up, I lived with my grandma when I was young. And so I heard all of these stories and I became a keeper of stories. But I was taught to hear her before I could understand her, because one day her voice and that language might not be available to me. I needed to remember that in my heart. She called that heart memory. The memory of my heart. And so hearing our language and be able to speak our language to my children and to, you know, the land when I'm growing and I'm tending to my seeds in my garden, there's just some connection that's deep within me, and I believe it's in all people, that you just feel that there's this, we're trying to revitalize our languages, and I believe that they are alive and they're living, and we need to tend to them like they are alive and living, and keep that going.
If you've ever heard a recording, it's not quite the same thing, but if you've ever heard a recording of someone you love who has passed, it just hits you like a ton of bricks, and suddenly you're just bawling, and you're speechless, and their voice and their loved voice speaking whatever language you remember them speaking is so powerful.
Yes. I know that when I was writing to Koja, you know, I tried to get them good teachings that I remember within me. And I struggled with it was never going to come across as how I felt it. So it was important to me to have these deep illustrations. And, you know, as kids, you remember things based off of smells and how things looked. And that's how kind of it cultivates this beautiful memory within you. So I figured if I could get, you know, some of my grandmother's teachings in there, along with past dreams I've had of her, and then this beautiful illustrations and artwork, you know, the teaching will come when they remember, you know, them, how that made them feel. And that was important to me, because I knew that I was never going to put across what I felt when I heard them teachings of unconditional love and what that meant.
We never look at, I guess I'm thinking in particular, when I was a kid, of course, it was storybooks. And then we had story records that we could listen to and read along in a beautifully illustrated book. And of course, we read along, air quotes, before we could read. But I don't think I have ever paid such attention to any written matter as I did to those stories and connecting those illustrations to those stories. And even now, sometimes there'll be a glimpse of a picture or some little isolated thing in something that I see that brings me right back to that. Mm-hmm. Talk about the importance of the illustrations and who did the illustrations for the book.
So for Tokoja, Alicia Schwab did them. And then for the animals of Turtle Island, that was Jacqueline Gill. And I think for both of them, that's their artwork, and I totally loved what they did. You know, it was exciting for me to be able to see little by little their work and how it came out to this beautiful piece. But I was just talking with an illustrator the other day, a Dakota illustrator, and we spoke about how, you know, for me, writing it comes naturally, and I have all these stories built up, and they're all within me. So all I have to do really is write them down and edit them, and they're ready to go. For an illustrator, they're trying to create something that's magical for these kids to remember. And I think bridging that gap between the writer and the illustrator and forming that just perfect piece for that heart memory to come alive and thrive, it's everything. So it's not just about my story. I totally respect the illustrators because they need to make that beauty come alive and reach these kids. And like you said, that lasts forever.
Tara, we've got a little bit of noise on the line, but your words are so beautiful. I think we're at a really good place to say thank you this morning for joining us. We'll get a link set up with information about how folks can find Animals of Turtle Island. And Tara, thanks again for being our guest this morning. What a treat.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Tara Perrin is the author of Animals of Turtle Island. It is available in English and Dakota. It is also available in Ojibwe and English. Minnesota Reads on Northland Morning is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.